to smack against a tree trunk. "Dragged your heels all the way here, I suspect. Either that, or the weight of your crown is making you sluggish." Arryn crossed his arms.
"I don't have a crown, which you well know."
"It was a metaphor, you fool."
Laura lifted a hand to her mouth, trying not to laugh. Somehow, the motion caught the old woman's attention despite her back being turned.
"Or is my grandson's tardiness the result of him trying to wipe puke off your face, little princess?"
Laura blinked.
"Smelled you from 100 paces away, girl. All those years in the dunes gave you no stomach for the waves, I take it."
Flushing, Laura glanced at her clothes, which were still damp from falling out of the boat. When she looked back up, Arryn's grandmother was on her feet, an amused smile on her face.
"It's your breath," she explained.
And Laura struggled not to stomp on Arryn's foot when he covered his own mouth to hide a smirk. The old woman noticed.
"A little seasickness wouldn't have killed her, you idiot. You shouldn't have caved."
"We took precautions."
"Next time, let her puke."
Her gaze shifted back to Laura.
"They all call me Nana, so you can too."
Then she pointed a finger at one of the guards.
"You, pluck and dress that bird, and you too."
She jerked her chin at another pair.
"Finish picking these and then wash them up. And you."
She leveled a steely gaze at Leah.
"There's a basket of laundry that needs scrubbing. See it done before you go."
Leah opened her mouth as though to protest, but Nana beat her to it.
"What? Too good to scrub the skids from an old woman's drawers? And before you say yes, remember that I wiped your shitty ass more times than I care to count when you were a babe. Be grateful that I can at least still do that much for myself."
The tall guardswoman scowled but said nothing, only collected the basket and disappeared down the slope to retrieve water.
"I assume Jor has gone off to bother my students."
It took Nana pointing it out for Laura to realize with a start that the man had abandoned them without her noticing.
"It still hasn't sunk in that they aren't interested in an old lecher like him."
"Your girls can take care of themselves," Arryn replied.
"That wasn't my point, now was it?"
Nana pulled the gate to the garden shut, then shuffled in their direction. Her hair was solid silver and her skin wrinkled. But her eyes were shrewd and discerning as she squinted at her grandson.
"Teeth!"
The barked command made Laura jump. But without hesitation, Arryn bent over and opened his mouth, allowing his grandmother to inspect his straight white teeth. She grunted with satisfaction and then patted his cheek.
"Good boy. Now, where's your sister been? Avoiding me?"
"Anna's teeth are fine, grandmother."
"Not her teeth that concern me. Has Arendelle asked for her yet?"
"No."
"Send her anyway. It shows good faith."
"No."
The word came out of Arryn as a growl, which surprised Laura. Surely he didn't intend to break his contract with the Northern Kingdom, not when he'd been willing to fulfill his half without argument.
"Anna doesn't need your coddling, boy. She can take care of herself."
"That's between me and her."
Nana grunted and spit before turning her attention to Laura.
"So this is what Silas sent us, is it?"
"Pleased to make your acquaintance."
Laura inclined her head with the same respect she'd have given a Maradrinian matron.
"We'll see how long that pleasure lasts."
Faster than Laura would have believed an old woman could move, Nana reached over and gripped her by the hips, twisting her this way and that, before running her hands up Laura's sides, laughing when Laura batted them away.
"Built for bedding, if not breeding."
She leveled a stare at her grandson.
"Which I'm certain you've noticed, even if you haven't availed yourself."
"Grandmother, for the love of God."
Reaching up, Nana flicked his earlobe hard.
"Mind your tongue, boy. Now, as I was saying,"
she turned back to Laura,
"you'll labor hard, but you'll deliver. You've the willpower."
She ran a quick finger down an old scar on Laura's arm, one she'd earned in a knife fight against a Valcotan warrior.
"And you've known pain."
This woman was too shrewd, too close.
"I'm not a broodmare." Thank goodness for that. We've little time for horses here in Ithacana. What we need is a queen who will produce an heir. Unlike your father, my grandson won't have an entire harem to ensure the royal line continues. Just you.
Laura crossed her arms, annoyed, though she had no right to be. There was zero chance of her producing anything. She'd been supplied with a year's worth of contraceptive tonic. There would be no surprises on that front.
Come with me. I'll give you something for the seasickness. Boy, you go find something else to keep you busy.
Laura followed her inside. She'd expected the interior of the home to be damp and musty like the bridge, but instead it was dry and warm, the polished wooden panels on the walls reflecting the flames in the fireplace. One wall hosted floor-to-ceiling shelves filled with jars packed with plants, powders, colored tonics, and what appeared to be insects of various sorts. There were also several long glass cages, and Laura shivered as she saw coiled forms move within them.
Don't like snakes?
I have a healthy respect for them. This earned a cackle of approval. After rooting around in her shelves, Nana produced a twisted root, which she passed to Laura.
Chew this before and while you're on the water. It will help keep the nausea at bay.
Laura sniffed it uncertainly, relieved to discover the smell, at least, was not disagreeable.
I've got nothing for overcoming fear, though. That's your own problem to manage.
Given I can't swim, I feel my fear of water is as healthy as my respect for snakes.
Learn!
The old woman's tone conveyed a lack of tolerance for complaint that reminded Laura briefly, painfully, of Master Eric. With a jerk, Nana opened the curtains covering one of the windows, allowing the sunlight to spill inside, then beckoned Laura closer.
You've your father's eyes. And your grandfather's.
Laura shrugged. The color is some small proof that I'm a true princess of Maradrina.
I wasn't talking about the color.
Quick as the snakes in the cages, Nana caught Laura by the chin, fingers pressing painfully against her jaw.
You're a sly little thing, just like them, always searching for an advantage.
Resisting the urge to pull away, Laura stared back into the woman's eyes, which were hazel, like Auron's. But what she saw within them was very different from what she saw in his. You speak as though you know my family.
I was a spy when I was young. Your grandfather recruited me into his harem. He had the foulest breath of any man I've ever met. But I learned to hold my breath and think of Ithacana.
Laura blinked. This woman had infiltrated the harem as a spy? That it could be done was alarming of itself, but only the loveliest girls were brought into the king's harem, and Nana was...
I didn't always look like the last prune left in the bowl, girl. In my day, I was quite the beauty.
Her fingers tightened.
So don't think I don't know firsthand how you use your fair face to achieve your own ends, or the ends of your country.
I am here to nurture the peace between Ithacana and Maradrina. Laura considered whether she'd have to find a way to see this woman put down. While she was confident in her ability to manipulate Auron and those close to him, Nana was quite another story.
This kingdom wasn't built by fools. Your father sent you to make trouble. And if you think we aren't watching you, you're wrong.
Unease flickered in Laura's chest.
Auron cares a great deal for honor, and he'll keep his word to you no matter what it costs him.
Nana's eyes narrowed.
But I don't give a squirt of piss for honor. What I care about is family, and if I think you are a true threat to my grandson, don't think for a heartbeat that I won't arrange for an accident to occur.
The woman's smile was all straight white teeth.
Ithacana is a dangerous place.
And I'm a dangerous woman, Laura thought before answering. He seems more than capable of taking care of himself, but I appreciate your candor.
I'm sure.
Nana's eyes seemed to delve straight into Laura's soul, and she felt no small amount of relief when the old woman twitched the curtain shut and gestured to the door.
He won't want to miss the tides. Herondale is running cattle, and he hates cows in the bridge.
Because they're not making him any money, Laura thought bitterly. But she couldn't help asking, why is that?
Because he got trampled during one of the annual runs when he was 15. 3 cracked ribs and a broken arm, though he'd tell you the worst was having to stay with me while he recovered.
Annual runs? What the hell was the old woman talking about? The only reason there was cattle in the bridge was because her father had arranged to have them purchased at Northwatch. Not for the first time. Unease flickered through her at the disconnect between what she knew to be true and what she was seeing and hearing in Ithacana. They must have been sold to Valcata, or another nation, she decided. Loaded onto ships so that Maradrina was bypassed entirely. Though given Valcata's enormous herds, she didn't see why they'd be importing them. Pushing the thought aside, Laura followed Nana outside, where she was blinded for a few paces by the brilliant sunlight. But when her vision cleared, it revealed Auron frowning, as he haphazardly hung laundry on a line. A glowering Leah crouched next to a wash basin by his feet.
I see there have been gaps in your education, boy.
Nana scowled at a dripping sheet.
I'm willing to accept certain personal failings.
Auron jerked his hand away in horror from a voluminous pair of undergarments that Leah was trying to hand to him. Nana rolled her eyes.
Useless child.
But Laura didn't miss the faint smile that grew on the old woman's face as Auron dried his hands on his trousers.
You intend to elaborate on why you had me drag Laura all the way here? I assume it wasn't for a 5-minute conversation.
Oh, Laura and I will be talking a great deal over the coming weeks because you're going to leave her here with me.
Laura's mouth dropped open with horror, no amount of training enough to hide her dismay over this development. Auron rocked from his heels to his toes, eyes narrowed.
Why would I do that?
Because she's the Rat King's spawn, and I'll not have her roaming mid-watch while you're distracted with more important matters. Here I can keep an eye on her.
And probably arrange an accident within the week.
No.
Nana planted her wrinkled hands on her hips.
I wasn't giving you the choice, boy. Besides, what need have you of her? Despite all the practice you've had over the years, you haven't had her on her back once, by my reckoning. And you aren't going to have time for it over the next 2 months, so she might as well be here where I can put her to use.
Auron exhaled a long, slow breath, casting his eyes up to the sky as though searching for patience. Laura bit her tongue, waiting for his response, knowing she was screwed if he acceded to his grandmother's request.
No, I didn't bring her to Ithacana to keep her locked up as a prisoner, and I certainly didn't bring her so you could keep her as a servant. She's coming with me.
Nana's jaw hardened, her muddy fingernails digging into the fabric of her tunic. He's never said no to her before, Laura thought, amazed.
You've too much of your mother in you, Auron. Both of you blind, idealistic fools.
We're done here, Laura. Come on.
Auron twisted on his heel, and Laura scampered after him, half convinced that Nana would stick a knife in her back in a last-ditch effort to keep her from Auron. From behind, she heard the old woman snap,
Jor, you keep that boy safe or I'll cut your balls off and feed them to my snakes.
Always do, Nana.
Jor trotted past Laura and Auron.
I'd walk faster. She's not a woman used to being denied.
Auron snorted, but kept to his measured pace.
I should have guessed this is what she wanted. Controlling old bat.
Controlling, yes, but also far too canny for her own good. Laura might be walking away with Auron, but he'd heard Nana's warnings. If Laura wasn't careful, he might begin to take those warnings to heart. You can't fault her for trying to protect her grandson. She's fond of you. Laura shied away from a tree hosting an enormous spider.
Most people are. I'm quite charming, or so I'm told.
Laura shot him a pitying look.
A king should rarely take a compliment at face value. Sycophants and all that.
How fortunate that I now have you to give me the unvarnished truth.
Would you prefer varnished lies?
Possibly. I'm not certain my untested ego is ready for so much abuse. My soldiers might not follow me if they're subjected to night after night of me crying in my cup.
Try sobbing into your pillow. It muffles the noise. Arin laughed, then glanced backward at the house.
What did she say to you?
Holding up the root she'd been given, Laura paused, realizing that Nana had suspected Arin would refuse, which begged the question, why had he? The reason, she suspected, was more complicated than desire to get her between the sheets. Apparently, she takes offense to the idea of me puking on your boots. He rewarded her with a low chuckle that sent an unexpected thrill racing through her. Then he extracted the blindfold from where it had been tucked into his belt, her shoulders tightening reflexively, as he wrapped it around her face, his fingers smelling like soap.
Do you want to walk or be carried?
Walk. Though she came to regret the decision when she'd tripped for about the dozenth time, relief filling her when they stepped into the cool darkness of the pier, Arin holding her elbows to steady her as she climbed the steps. She counted them, calculating the distance. Back inside the bridge, the group moved at speed, no one speaking. So it was unmistakable when the faint sound of a horn, long and mournful, pierced the thickness of the stone encasing them. Arin and the rest stopped in their tracks, listening. It sounded again, the same long note, followed by a pattern of short peals that repeated three times in rapid succession before cutting off in the middle of the fourth, as though the horn had been ripped from the blower's lips.
That's Sereth's call for aid, Jor said. Have its civilians departed for wartides yet?
Arin demanded. Wartides?
No.
Even with the blindfold on, Laura felt the tension running through the group crackling like an electric storm.
Who's closest?
There was a shake to Arin's voice, a hint of something Laura had yet to see in him. Fear.
We are. We can't leave her alone in the bridge. We can't spare anyone to stay with her, and we don't have time to bring her back to Nana.
Laura bit her tongue, wanting to weigh in, but knowing she was best served in saying nothing.
No helping it. We'll have to bring her with us.
Arin's hands brushed against the side of her face as he pulled off the blindfold.
Keep up. Keep silent. And when the fighting starts, stay out of the way.
Praying he'd mistake her excitement for fear, she nodded once. I will. The group broke into a run. Laura struggled to keep pace with the Ithaconians, the stale air burning in her chest as the group sprinted through the bridge. Only luck allowed her to notice when Leah planted a foot square on a mile marker, her mouth moving silently as she began counting her strides. Laura picked up Leah's count, storing away the number when the other woman held up a hand and skidded to a stop. Jor boosted her on his shoulders while the rest prepared their gear. None of them spoke, and Laura kept the shadows as she watched Leah reach up to press her palm against what appeared to be smooth stone. There was a heavy click. Then, with a heave of effort, she lifted up a hinged hatch in the ceiling of the bridge. Another way in. Triumph rushed through Laura, even as cool air gusted inside, catching the loose strands of her hair as Jor and Arin lifted the other soldiers into the opening. Then Jor was up, and only she and Arin remained.
You ever reveal any of this to anyone, I'll kill you myself.
Without waiting for a response, he grabbed Laura by the waist and raised her up into the opening. Jor caught hold of her arms, lifting her onto the top of the bridge before leaning down to haul Arin up as well, the two of them flipping the hatch shut. But it was hard for Laura to focus on what the men were doing, because she stood on a bridge through the clouds. Wet mist had settled back on Ithaconna while they'd been inside, and it whirled and gusted, pulling at her clothes before spinning away in violent little eddies. Below, the sea crashed against a pier or an island, or maybe both, she couldn't tell. Couldn't see more than a dozen paces in either direction, and it was like being in a totally different world. like being in a dream that stood on the brink of a nightmare.
Be careful. Auryn took her hand. It's slippery, and we're at a high point. You wouldn't survive the fall.
She followed him at a slow run, everyone struggling to keep their balance on the slick surface as the bridge sloped down toward the next pier, which Laura could only faintly see through the mist. But before they reached it, the guards all dropped, as though given an invisible cue, Auryn hauling her down with him. As Laura's hands pressed against the wet stone, her eyes landed on a mile marker, the wheels in her mind turning, as a strategy for invasion began to form. Jor had a spyglass out, which he panned this way and that before freezing in place.
Homerid Navy vessel.
He passed the glass to Auryn, who looked once, then swore.
We should wait for reinforcements,
Jor continued, taking the glass back and crawling to the opposite side of the bridge, staring out in the same direction as the rest of the soldiers. The mist swirled, revealing an island for a heartbeat, before obscuring it again.
Once they get their whole crew on land, we'll be badly outnumbered.
No one spoke, and it was then that the winds shifted direction. With them came the screams.
We go now,
Auryn ordered. None of the guards argued. One of them attached a cable to a thick metal ring embedded in the bridge, the other end fixed to a heavy bolt that was fitted into a weapon designed like a crossbow. Then he handed it to Auryn.
You do the honors, Your Grace.
Auryn took the weapon, kneeling on the stone.
Come on, let me see.
The wind stalled, and no one seemed to breathe. Laura dug her fingers into the stone, watching, waiting, the anticipation making her heart race. Then the air roared against them, sweeping away the clouds, and Auryn smiled once. He released the bolt with a loud twang, grunting against the force of the recoil. The bolt soared toward the island, trailing the slender cable after it, and with a loud crack audible even from the distance, it spiked through one of the trees. The soldier who'd given him the weapon tightened up the slack on the cable and knotted it off. Then, with seemingly no fear, he pulled on a heavy glove, attached a hook over the cable, and swung out into the open air. Laura watched in amazement as the man shot along the wire over the open sea, going faster and faster until he was over land, and then reached up with the glove and slowed himself, dropping like a cat into the brush beneath the tree. The rest of the soldiers followed swiftly, but as Laura glanced over her shoulder, she determined Auryn wasn't paying them the slightest bit of attention. Instead, he was mixing powders into a small bladder. As she watched, he added water to the mixture, then, very carefully, attached the device to an arrow with a bit of twine. He lifted it to his bow and shot it at the ship anchored below. Seconds later, an explosion shook the air, the ship visible through the mist, as flames climbed the rigging.
That ought to keep them busy.
Slinging his bow over his shoulder, he removed a hook and glove like the others had used.
I'm going to need you to hold on to me.
Wordlessly, Laura wrapped her arms around his neck and her legs around his waist. Heat rushed through her as he pulled her tight against him with his free hand.
Don't scream.
He flipped the hook over the line and jumped. Laura barely contained her shriek, clinging to him as they dropped, soaring downward at incredible speed. Below, the surf broke against the island cliffs, and she could make out the longboats retreating from a small cove to the burning ship to assist their comrades. Wind roared in her ears, and then they were above green jungle.
Hold on tight,
he said into her ear. Then he let go of her, reaching up with a gloved hand to grip the cable, checking their speed until they hung safely above the others. Laura let go, landing among them, and she purposely wobbled and fell on her ass even as Auryn landed with predatory grace next to her. In a practiced move, he extracted a leather mask identical to those all the guards were now wearing and pulled it over his face.
Stay here, keep out of sight, and watch out for snakes.
Then they were gone. Laura waited until the count of 50, then went after them, knives in hand. She moved carefully, trusting that their passage would have sent any snakes racing away. It wasn't difficult to determine the direction they'd gone. She only had to follow the screams. A battle waged in a village. The interiors of the stone houses ablaze, countless dead and dying lying on the paths running between them. Some had been armed, most had not. Families, children, all cut down by the Amaridian soldiers fighting Auron and his guards. Keeping behind a tree, Laura watched the king of Ithacana hurl himself against the other men, machete in one hand, dagger in the other, leaving only corpses in his wake. He fought like he'd been born to it, fearless but clever, and she found herself unable to look away. Until shouts from the beach caught her attention. Abandoning her position, Laura retreated in that direction, her stomach tightening as she caught sight of the Amaridian soldiers moving up the trail toward the village. The ship was fully engulfed with fire, which meant these were desperate men with no avenue for escape. And Auron and his bodyguard were outnumbered 3-1. Unless she wanted Amarid to be the kingdom taking control of the bridge, she needed to even the odds. Laura picked a point just around the corner from a gap in a towering pair of rocks through which the soldiers would have to pass. Two soldiers rounded the bend, starting in surprise at the sight of her standing in their path.
"It's her, the Maradrinian girl."
She waited for them to rush her, these men as much Maradrina's enemy as they were Ithacana's, but they stood their ground, gaping at her as if uncertain what to do next.
"You're not supposed to be here,"
Laura shrugged.
"Your bad luck, I suppose." Then she threw her knives in rapid succession, the soldiers dropping, blades in their throats.
Three more came, and Laura snatched up one of the dead men's swords and launched herself forward, slashing one man's gut even as she dove under the blade of another, hamstringing him as she rolled. His comrades swung at her, and she parried, then kicked him in the knee, burying her blade in his chest as he fell. Taking up his weapon as she rose, Laura attacked the third, driving him back before slicing off his hand at the wrist. The soldier screamed, his blood splattering in her face, even as he collided with the soldiers who'd come up from behind. It was screaming and chaos, men tripping over the bodies of their companions as they tried to squeeze through the narrow pass, Laura killing them when convenient, maiming them when it wasn't, her goal to keep them from joining the battle and from overwhelming Auron and his soldiers. But when a pair of arrows whistled over her head, she threw herself into the jungle, hiding in the underbrush as the rest of the Amaridian soldiers rushed past. Once they were gone, she retrieved her throwing knives and sheathed them in favor of using one of the Amaridian's heavier weapons. Slicing throats as she went, Laura ran up the trail to the village. There was blood everywhere, bodies everywhere. Several of the honor guard had fallen, and Laura's stomach plunged as she searched those remaining for Auron. She found him fighting an enormous man wielding a chain. Auron's clothes were bloody, his once sharp movements now sluggish and sloppy. The Amaridian warrior swung his chain hard, and Laura hissed as it caught Auron in the ribs, doubling him over. She instinctively took several steps in their direction, knife in hand, ready to intervene. But Auron came up swinging, catching the big man in the face with his fist, then plunging a knife into his gut. They both went down in a heap. But before Auron could get back to his feet, another Amaridian soldier charged toward his exposed back. Without thinking, Laura threw herself between them, her knife sinking in beneath the sternum, angling up to pierce the soldier's heart. His momentum knocked her over, the wind rushing out of her lungs as her shoulders hit the ground, the dying soldier falling on top of her. He was flailing and thrashing, the hilt of the knife digging into her stomach, and she couldn't get out from under him. Couldn't breathe as the meaty bulk of his chest pressed down against her face. The weight abruptly lifted. Laura gasped, sucking in air before rolling onto her hands and knees, watching as Auron unnecessarily slid a knife across the dead soldier's throat. Hands slick with the other man's blood, Auron grabbed hold of her arms, pulling her close.
"Are you all right? Are you hurt?"
He was pulling at her clothes, the blood of the dead sailor mercifully concealing that from her victims on the pathway.
"I'm fine," she gasped, finally able to breathe. "You're not."
He was bleeding heavily from a gash on his forearm, but she suspected that wasn't the worst of it.
It's nothing. Stay back. Stay out of sight.
He tried to push her behind one of the village homes, but she clung to his shoulders, desperate to keep him out of the fray. If he died, everything was for naught. He hesitated, and she buried her face in his shoulder, certain he'd set her aside and re-enter the battle. But he was injured and spent, and it would not end well. Panic rose in her throat, and she whispered the only thing she could think of that would get him to stay.
Please, don't leave me.
His hands were hot against her back, both of them soaked with the blood of their enemies.
Laura.
His voice was pained, and she knew he was seeing the bodies of his people, that he was seeing his bodyguard, fighting and faltering against the enemy.
You could fight. You could fight for him and save these people.
The thought danced across her mind. But she was saved from having to make a decision by the arrival of reinforcements. Ithaconian soldiers poured into the village, Arryn's bodyguard falling back, encircling him and Laura as the others cut down the Amaridian soldiers, ruthlessly dispatching the injured until the only sound was the moans and cries of the villagers. Arryn didn't let go of her until it was over. Smoke burned Laura's eyes as she looked around, as she saw for the first time what war really looked like. Not just dead soldiers, but unarmed civilians lying on the ground. The still forms of children.
Do you think it will be any different when your father comes with his army? Do you think they'll show any more mercy?
Villagers who had fled began to return to the village, mostly older children clutching babies and the hands of small children. Some of them began to sob as they found the still forms of their parents. But far too many just stood still, faces lost and hopeless.
Still believe those Amaridian sailors deserved mercy?
No. She strode toward the nearest injured Ithaconian, ripping strips of fabric from her tunic as she dropped to her knees. I don't.
Arryn stared into the basin of water, its contents slowly turning red as he washed away the blood crusting his fingernails. His blood. The blood of his enemies. The blood of his people. The water trembled and he jerked his hands out of the basin, wiping them dry on a piece of toweling that had been left for him. Every inch of him ached, especially his ribs where that big bastard had caught him with the chain. Nana had informed him nothing was broken, but his side was already a livid bruise, and experience told him that tomorrow would be worse. Yet he'd take the pain 1,000 times over if it meant arriving at Sereth sooner. 20 minutes earlier, 10, 5, even a heartbeat sooner might have allowed him to save at least one of the villagers who'd been killed today.
The call to assemble the council in Arryn-Hall has been sent and replies received. Everyone will be there by nightfall.
He turned to find Jor standing behind him, the bandage wrapped around his head concealing the deep gash he'd taken in the fighting. A gash that Laura, of all people, had stitched up. Of their own accord, Arryn's eyes drifted to where his wife knelt among the wounded, silently taking direction from Nana and her students. Her honey-colored hair was crusted dark with blood, as were her clothes, but rather than detracting from her beauty, it only made her seem fierce, like a warrior. Half a day ago, the notion would have been laughable, but not anymore. Jor tracked his gaze, giving a deep sigh when he saw who Arryn was staring at.
She's in possession of a problematic amount of information. There was no helping it. Doesn't mean it isn't a problem.
She saved my life. Jor sucked in a deep breath, then blew it out slowly.
Did she now?
I was down and one of them came at my back. She got in the way and stuck a knife in him. Every time he blinked, Arryn saw Laura beneath that brute of an Amaridian, blood everywhere. Felt the fear of certainty that all the blood was hers.
Sort of ruins the theory that she's here to assassinate me, don't you think? Maybe she wants to do it herself.
Laura lifted her head as though sensing their scrutiny. Arryn turned away before their eyes could meet, and the pile of dead Amaridians came into his line of sight. He'd pulled the bastard off her and slit his throat, but the man had been already dead. The knife Laura had picked up somewhere embedded with precision in his heart. Luck, he told himself, but Arryn's instincts were telling him something else.
If anything, we need to keep a closer eye on her now. If the Maradrenians determine where she is and come for her, that little lass's head is full of enough bridge secrets to cause us some serious trouble.
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that maybe she's more trouble than she's worth. Accidents happen. Snakes find their way into beds. The Maradrenians could hardly hold it against us. No. Then keep pretending she's alive.
Jor had mistaken the reason for Arryn's refusal.
Get a forger to fake her letters to her father. They never have to know.
Arryn turned on the man who'd watched over him since he was a child. I will say this once and never again. If anyone harms her, they lose their head. That goes for you, it goes for Aster, and it goes for my grandmother too, lest she think me ignorant to her ways. Understood? Without waiting for a response, Arryn walked to the pyres that had been hastily assembled on the outskirts of the village, the air thick with the smell of the oil drenching the wood. Dozens of bodies, big and small, were laid out in even rows, and the survivors stood around it, some weeping, some staring into nothingness. Someone passed him a torch, and Arryn stared at the flickering flames, knowing that he should say something. But any words he might offer these people that he was supposed to protect, that he had failed to protect, seemed empty and meaningless. He couldn't promise it wouldn't happen again, because it would. He couldn't promise revenge, because even if raiding Amarid were a possibility for his already strained army, he wouldn't lower himself to harming Amaridian civilians just because their queen was a vindictive bitch. He could tell them that he fully intended to send a crate full of heads along with the charred remains of the ship's flag back to their mistress, but what did that even mean? It wouldn't bring back the dead. So he said nothing, only leaned forward to touch the torch of the oil-soaked wood. Flames tore along the branches, the air growing hot, and it wasn't long until his nose filled with the awful smell of burning hair, charring blood, cooking flesh. It made his stomach churn, and he gritted his teeth, wanting to flee but forcing himself to hold his ground.
The ships are here from Arryn-Al, Jor said. We need to start loading the survivors or we'll lose the weather.
As if to emphasize the point, a droplet of rain smacked against Arryn's forehead. Then another and another.
Give them a minute.
He couldn't tear his gaze from a sobbing mother standing too close to the now hissing flames. This morning she would have woken, believing that by nightfall she and her family would be on the way to the safety of Arryn-Al. And now she'd be making the journey alone.
Arryn, give them a goddamned minute.
Heads turned at the sharpness of his tone, and he strode away from the flames, past the injured whom Nana and her students were preparing for the journey, and down the path to the cove where the ships waited. Rounding the bend, he frowned at the dozen or so dead enemy soldiers that had been dragged to the side of the path when something caught his eye, a man with an Amaridian blade embedded in his chest. Backtracking, Arryn examined the corpses more closely. Most of his soldiers fought hand-to-hand with knives and the machetes they needed to move through the dense jungle underbrush, and the wide blades made for distinct injuries. But most of these men bore wounds inflicted by the slender swords favored by Amarid, and several of them had the 8-inch knives these soldiers carried embedded in their bodies. They were killed by their own weapons. Arryn stepped back a few paces to examine the scene, eyes drifting over the pools of blood mixing with rain to create growing puddles. These men had been killed by individuals they'd encountered coming up the path, not from behind by his reinforcements. But by whom? All of his guard had been with him in the village, as were the civilians who could fight. A prickle rose on the back of Arryn's neck. Hand going to the blade at his waist, he whirled around, only to find Laura standing in the middle of the path. Her eyes drifted to where his hand lingered on his weapon and one of her eyebrows rose, but for reasons Arryn couldn't articulate, he couldn't let go of the hilt. She'd killed that soldier with an Omeridian blade. But her only visible injury was a bruise on her cheek. Never mind that Maradrinian women were forbidden from fighting, the very idea that she could have accomplished this on her own was utter lunacy. His best fighters couldn't have done it alone.
Where will they go?
Her voice cut through his thoughts. There are safer places. He wondered why he was being so cagey when now she knew so much. But it was one thing for her to know about the bridge, quite another for her to know about Erenall. Without the bridge, Erenall doesn't exist. His father's voice whispered in his ear. Ithacana doesn't exist. Defend the bridge. If there are safer places, why don't you keep your civilians there? There were practical reasons. Keeping every Ithacanian civilian within Erenall year-round was impossible, but that wasn't the reason he gave. Because that would be like keeping them in cages, and my people are free. The word caught in his throat, a sudden understanding of what his mother had been fighting for, slapping him in the face. For what was Ithacana but a larger prison, those born to it forbidden to ever leave? Laura went very still, her head cocked and eyes unblinking, as though his answer had dug deep into her thoughts, leaving no space for anything else. Their freedom seems to come at a significant cost. Freedom always has a price. How much larger would the price be to allow his people the freedom of the world? Yes. The word seemed to stick in her throat, and she shook her head once, her eyes going to the dead men lining the path. Aran watched her closely, searching her expression for any clue that she was somehow complicit in their deaths, but she only appeared deep in thought. You should head down to the cove. The boats are waiting. Tearing her eyes from the corpses, Laura walked toward him, silent as any Ithacanian as she navigated the slick slope. His heart skipped, then accelerated, the steady thump-thump rhythm it took when he was heading into battle or trying to outrun a storm. The thrill that, despite knowing he should not, Aran had sought all his life. Laura stopped in front of him. Her hair was wet from the rain, a stray lock plastered against her cheek. It took all his self-control not to brush it away. Once the boats are loaded, I'm leaving for a meeting. You'll stay with my grandmother until I return for you. Laura frowned, but rather than arguing, she reached up and placed her hand on his, her skin feverishly hot. Then, with surprising strength, she pushed down, snapping his blade back into its sheath. I'll wait by the water. Without another word, she stepped over a puddle and made her way down the path toward the beach.
War tides. That's what the villagers on Sarath Island had called it. The two coldest months of the year when the tempest seas were calm enough for Ithacana's enemies to attack. And this year, war tides had come early. So early that the villagers had not yet been evacuated to the mysterious location where they spent the season, which was probably why the Omeridian Navy had twice risked getting caught in a late storm. For while a well-defended singular location could be protected, countless little civilian outposts were another matter. It was the best time to attack, the cold, strategic part of Laura thought. When Ithacana's army would be forced to split their efforts between protecting dozens of small villages and protecting the bridge. And if it came to it, she knew Aran would put his people's lives first. It had been written on his face when those horns had sounded, the panic and desperation, the willingness to risk everything to save them. And the dead look in his eyes as he surveyed the massacred village and known that he'd failed. They aren't your responsibility. She viciously reminded herself. Your loyalty is to Maradrina, to the civilians of your homeland who suffer under Ithacana's monopoly on trade, to the Maradrinian children who have nothing on their plates but rotting vegetables and rancid meat, if they have anything to eat at all. They are dying as surely as if Ithacana were slitting their throats. The thoughts were enough to turn her mind to the matter of smuggling information out of Ithacana.
While it might be possible for her to code short messages into her letters to her father, she didn't dare attempt to include any of the details she'd learned about the bridge. If the codebreakers noticed them, she'd be lucky to get out of Ithacana alive. And everything that she'd done would be for naught. Arryn knew where she'd been and what she'd learned. It would be easy for them to shore up the defenses, and there would be no catching them by surprise. No. She had to gather the information she needed and then smuggle it out all at once. The question was, how? Instinctively, she knew that the way had to be through the King of Ithacana himself. Her thoughts went to her cosmetics box, within which the ink Saren had given her was hidden. Not only did she need to entice Arryn to write a message to her father, she needed to steal it for long enough to write her own. Never mind the problem of resealing it without anyone noticing that it had been tampered with.
"Quit plotting and help Taryn with the dishes, you lazy tit!"
Nana's voice ripped Laura from her thoughts, and she turned to scowl at the old woman.
"What? Did you not hear, or did you not understand?"
Nana's hands were on her hips, a large snake wrapped around her neck and shoulders. It lifted its head to regard Laura, and she shivered.
"This is my island. And on my island, if you wish to eat, you work. On your feet," she clapped her hands sharply.
Laura rose, instantly annoyed with having obeyed, but to sit back down would be childish.
"Out!"
Glowering, she stepped out into the morning air, catching sight of Taryn, who sat next to the washtub, up to her elbows in soapy water. The young woman was the only one of Arryn's guards to remain with her, the one to have drawn the short straw. She'd readily griped to Laura on her blindfolded walk back through the bridge to Nana's island, which was called Gamire, a group of unfamiliar soldiers silently trailing them. Laura had thought it Taryn's reluctance to spend time with her, or perhaps disappointment over not going to wherever Arryn had scuttled off to, that had made the role undesirable. But after a night spent in Nana's house, the real reason was apparent. The old witch was an obnoxious, bullying harridan, and Laura had no idea how she was going to keep from murdering the bloody woman in her sleep.
"You'll get used to her after a while."
Taryn dunked a plate into the steaming basin.
"Helps that most of us have been patched back together by her at least once."
Letting go of the dish, the woman lifted up her undershirt to reveal an oval-shaped series of scars that covered the better half of her ribs.
"I fell into the water during a skirmish, and a shark had a go at me. If not for Nana, I'd be dead."
A knife, or a sword, or an arrow, those were wounds Laura could fathom. But that? Nasty creatures.
"Not really."
Taryn dropped her undershirt and returned to the plate.
"They've been trained to be man-eaters, but it's not their preference."
Taking the dripping plate and rubbing it with a towel, Laura thought of the Omeridian sailors being dragged beneath the surface. The blooms of blood.
"If you say so."
Pushing back her long, dark ponytail, Taryn smiled, revealing straight white teeth that must please Nana greatly.
"They are brilliant creatures. There are a few who stay with us always, but most of them are only here during war tides. That, more than the weather, is how Nana knows when storm season is coming or going. The fishermen notice their numbers."
Did her father and Saren know that? Laura chewed the insides of her cheeks, considering the information. One of the risks of attacking at the beginning of the calm season was that there was no way to predict exactly when it would begin.
"They always congregate at the places where raiders attack the most, like at midwatch."
Taryn swirled a rag inside a chipped mug before handing it over.
"There are myths that say they are guardians of Ithacana's people, which is why it is forbidden to harm them unless absolutely necessary.
It's just a myth, though. They come to be fed.
And they don't discern between us or our enemies. Anyone in the water is fair game."
Laura shivered, setting the dry cup in a clean basin with the rest.
"Quit your chattering. There's other chores that need doing."
Taryn rolled her eyes.
"Want to escape?"
Is escape from Nana possible? a wink. I've had lots of practice. True to her word, after the clean dishes were put away, Taryn managed to have them assigned to a task that sent them down into a village Laura hadn't even realized was there. She took in the Ithaconians bustling about between the stone houses, or cajoling children who were shirking their chores. Why isn't it evacuated? They don't need to be. Gamayr Island is safe.
Find the civilians. Laura remembered Saren's words, the back of her neck prickling as two children ran past her, sacks of oats in their arms.
Her eyes took in the village again. There were groups of men gutting fish, but her nose picked up the scent of baking bread, of red meat on the grill, and the faint tang of lemon, though not once had she seen a fruit tree in this place, which meant it had all come as an import via the bridge. Those living on the other islands, where do they go for war tides? She asked, because not asking would be more suspicious, and because she was deeply curious where this mystery location might be.
That's for the king to tell you. Taryn gave her a sideways glance. Or not, as the case may be.
He's not particularly forthcoming. Shrugging is a way to silence that line of questioning. Taryn led Laura down a narrow path through the jungle. They walked until the breeze rose and the scent of salt filled the air, waves loud where they crashed against the cliff walls. Laura didn't see the shipbreaker until the old soldier manning it shifted next to it. Pleased recognition gleamed in his eyes at the sight of Taryn, but his gaze hardened as it landed on Laura.
We're your relief for the next hour, Taryn said. Use it wisely and get yourself some of that meat I smell cooking.
After the soldier departed, she said, Don't take it personally. Most everyone above a certain age lost a loved one or two to the war with Mar-Adrina. Even after 15 years of peace, it's hard for them to see you as anything other than the enemy.
I am the enemy, Laura thought.
You don't?
I did, at first.
Taryn's gray eyes stared off into the distance. Until you saved my cousin's life.
Cousin?
Laura blinked, eyeing the muscular brunette in a different light.
Arryn is your cousin.
I see that surprises you. Huffing out an amused breath, Taryn said, My father is Arryn's father's brother, which makes Nana my grandmother, too, if you're keeping track. She hadn't been, but perhaps she should. The female guard was not exactly royalty, but very nearly. And there was nothing about her that had even hinted it was so. Taryn wore the same drab gear as the rest of the guards, lived in the spare accommodations of the barracks, cooked and cleaned with the rest of her comrades. Other than her weapons, which were quality, there was nothing about her that suggested wealth or privilege.
Where does all the money go?
Laura wondered, remembering the incredible revenue numbers she'd seen on the pages in Arryn's desk. As a child, she'd believed Ithacana must have palaces made of gold, filled with everything they took from Mar-Adrina and the other kingdoms. But so far, she'd seen only modest luxury.
You could have stood by and let him be killed, but instead you risked your life to save him. That's not the act of an enemy.
If only you knew. Laura's stomach hollowed, her breakfast no longer sitting quite so well. Picking up a spyglass, Taryn panned the ocean, allowing Laura the opportunity to examine the shipbreaker. The catapult was large, made of solid wood and steel and mounted to a base that was bolted to the rocky ground beneath it. There were any number of levers and gears, and to either side of it were two identical, yet much smaller, devices. A glance over her shoulder revealed a lumpy pile covered with gray-green canvas, which were undoubtedly the projectiles. Easing up the corner of the tarp, Laura eyed a stone that might have weighed 50 pounds. It didn't seem big enough to have done the damage she'd seen enacted at midwatch. But, combined with enough force, she turned back to the shipbreaker to find Taryn watching her. The other woman grinned.
We launched Arryn once.
Pardon?
Leah and I. Though it was his idea. Lest you think us total idiots.
Taryn patted the machine.
We were maybe 12 or 13, and he got the grand notion that it would be fun to see how high we'd fly. though he was the only one who got to try it out.
Did it work?
Oh, he flew all right. But what he didn't account for was how much the landing would hurt. Thankfully, there was a fishing boat nearby to pull him out. Nana had us lugging rocks for weeks as punishment, and that was after Jor screamed at us up and down the entire island. He's lucky not to have gotten himself killed. And how different would Laura's life have been if he had? Or would she even have a life at all? She could easily imagine her father receiving the news of the Prince of Ithacana's untimely death, only to turn around and exterminate all those involved in the plot that had depended on the 15-year treaty. Taryn grinned. You could say that about half the things he does. She patted the weapon again. Want to give it a try? And now I see to the heart of the ploy of bringing me down here. Not you, a rock. Oh, Laura eyed the machine in a whole new light. Yes, yes I would. It was an incredible piece of machinery, able to be operated by a single individual, but given the weight of the stones, Laura was glad there were two of them. It rotated silently on its base, and various cranks allowed the user to adjust it to change the distance a stone could be thrown. The smaller of the catapults, she learned, were intended to mark distance. Everything finely calibrated. We'll try to hit that piece of driftwood. Under Taryn's watchful eye, Laura lobbed small rocks at the floating debris until she struck it. Nicely done, Your Majesty. Now we adjust the big one to the same distance like so. The woman turned the cranks and Laura watched intently until she stepped back. Now you do the honors. Hands sweating with excitement, Laura took hold of the biggest lever of all and pulled. The catapult released with a tremendous crack, and they both stepped around the machine to watch as the rock sailed through the air and crashed into the driftwood. Taryn punched her fist into the air. You sank your first ship! There was a commotion behind them, and the soldier they'd relieved raced up next to them.
Raiders, he demanded.
Tests. His Majesty ordered that all the shipbreakers be tested again. This one appears to be in fine order. Taryn nodded at Laura. Shall we carry on, Your Grace? Laura hid a smile. By all means. They spent the day touring the island, testing the shipbreakers, and then found themselves back at the village for dinner, which they took standing around an open fire with nearly all the villagers in attendance. It was, Taryn told her, to honor those lives lost on the neighboring island of Sereth. Laura ate grilled meat and vegetables from the sticks on which they were skewered, drank the frothy beer from a mug that never seemed to empty, and warmed her hands against the flames when the night breeze turned cool. The villagers were wary of her at first, and Laura stood somewhat apart, listening as they told stories about the myths of Ithacana, of serpents and storms that defended the Emerald Isles, of the ancient bridge itself, which their legends said was not built, but had grown out of the earth, like a living thing. Their words rose and fell until children dozed off in their parents' arms and were tucked under woolen blankets. Then instruments were brought out, drums and guitars and pipes, the music accompanying the men and women as they sang and danced, Taryn joining in with a surprisingly lovely soprano voice. They cajoled Laura to join in the singing, but she begged off, pleading a terrible singing voice. But it was mostly because she wanted to watch and listen and learn. When the gathering began to quiet, couples slipping off into the darkness hand in hand, the older folk forming circles where they gossiped and complained, passing around a smoking pipe from person to person, Taryn finally rested a hand on Laura's shoulder. We should get back before Nana comes looking for us. Guided by the faint light of a lantern, they made their way up the narrow path, the sounds of the jungle wild and riotous around them. I didn't want to be a soldier, you know. Laura cast a sideways glance at Taryn. I'm not surprised. You strike me as more of a fisherwoman.
I wanted to go to one of the universities in Herondale to study music.
The universities in Herondale were renowned throughout all the kingdoms, north and south. But the idea that an Ithacanian would wish to attend struck Laura as odd because it was impossible. But Ithaconians never leave. Because it's forbidden. Taryn waved her hand. Oh, there are spies who go, of course, but it's not the same. It's a false life where you aren't yourself. And I couldn't abide that. To follow my dream.